Okay, so this is the patron-only section. Matt, I have a couple questions for you, and I think these specifically, usually I ask people about video game stuff, but I'm actually more interested in asking you about TV stuff, because I think your Prestige TV opinions are so against the grain in some ways. If people have listened to the podcast, you'll know that I actually admire the way that they're against the grain. But I'm interested in sort of pushing that a little bit more. But let me ask you first. Maybe I will ask you a video game question to start off with. Has there ever been a video game that has sort of felt like that that mirror of Narcissus to you, that you sort of felt the temptation to just fall into forever and you know eschew all sorts of like the communication that we've been talking about over the last hour or so?
There were a couple. Yeah, I'd say. Probably the one that sort of jumps out just by virtue of how mad it made me, like how much it stirred emotions in me in a unique way, was GoldenEye for Nintendo 64. I played that.
This is like such a cultural
flashback. I played that with friends in college, and the rage that I felt when I got killed was genuine and pure and really kind of disturbing, frankly, compared to like what I was responding to. So I would say that is the one game where I feel like it was manufacturing emotions at a level that sort of beckoned me towards just embracing the simulation. But the thing that, honestly, and this is sort of like where maybe like your hardcore gamers who are listening might be scoffing at me, maybe you're right, is that the most of the emotions I got were frustration and rage because I was fucking terrible at it. I was awful. I got killed all the time. I was never good. I never won. And I was filled with rage. And so like maybe if I was better at it, maybe if instead of getting that just that heart filled with hatred, I was getting some sort of concomitant sense of accomplishment, maybe I would have become a gamer. But as it stands, man, I guess I could say I was saved by my shittiness.
Yeah, no, that was there before the grace of your shittiness, yes. Go you. It's I don't know though, like the level of just like seething anger a lot of political gamers have. I wonder how much of that was also forged in the same way of just like anger and frustration. I feel like that's like almost a universal, right? And maybe if you ever got like even slightly better, it would have like been for naught. So it's good that you,
for
you
me,
gave
yes.
Up.
I look back and I'm like, thank God I suck so bad.
I mean, GoldenEye, I was always really bad at co-op or competitive in GoldenEye, but I guess if you want to think about gaming as a bad thing or like as a dangerous sort of path, which we've sort of agreed on, I was unlucky in that I was able to sort of cobble my way through the main storyline. But yeah, man, that's just like, I feel like a generation of gamers was born via GoldenEye. Okay. So second question, you talk about this, and I focused on this in the podcast a little bit, but I'm a sucker for Horizons, and it's because I'm a Marxist literary critic, and that is like all we ever talk about constantly. I don't know if you ever have had the fortune or misfortune, depending on who you pick up, to read Marxist literary criticism, but like the idea of the Horizon is just it's everything. So you talk about a Horizon I don't know if you use that exact word, I can't remember, but you talk about this like this idea of, you know, we deserve better than Prestige TV. What do you think that is? Like, what do you think that would look like? What is that promised land? Is that more TV, different TV, or is that a different art form altogether?
I don't know if it's a different art form. I don't think I'm visionary enough to conceive of that. But I think what I'm imagining is a television that is not constrained by the need to cotton and sort of placate this class of TV critics that has arisen, because that's the thing about television now, is that the difference between a show that like runs for 7 or 8 seasons and a show that gets immediately canceled on streaming services and on cable can be like a couple of 100,000 viewers. Because it and so that means that the tastemakers amongst the people who write about TV are the ones who basically determine what's going to stick around and what isn't. And so these shows, and this is my main issue with prestige, quote unquote, television, is that these shows all subconsciously or consciously are mimicking tropes that they know are going to be successful and that they know are going to be responded to well. Because these people review, because that's what's so insane. Like, I remember when The Wire came out, David Simon's big pitch for it was a novel in television form, right? But right, people who review novels review an entire novel, the whole thing. They don't review chapters of a novel. But the people who review television shows review it on an episode-by-episode basis. And so that means that you have an entirely different incentive structure as the creator of a TV show. And you are bound by giving every episode specific legibility to reviewers. And then
interesting.
At the end of it, if you have engaged them enough over the course of your season, maybe you get picked up because enough tastemakers and water cooler people and, you know, people who go to BuzzFeed have watched it. And that, like, no other art form is judged that way. Like, the idea that that an episode of a TV show, if it is a continuing narrative, the way that all quote-unquote good shows are supposed to be now, the idea that critiquing an individual episode by itself as its own thing, that is unique to this art form, and it seems to me to be totally pernicious and undermining its ability to challenge the audience. Because if you present an hour of television that resists interpretation, what are the people whose job it is to critique it are supposed to say about it? And their response is probably going to be hostile because they got a deadline and they have to have a thing out. They have to have an article out. And then the people who are waiting to comment, which are the people who actually pay the bills because they click and they stay on the website long enough to justify the ads on the website so that they can talk about it. And it seems to me that that model cannot produce a variety. And that's the thing. It's about variety. Is that monoculture is the word I used towards the end of the piece, and that is really what I'm talking about, is that we've created a monoculture where all of these shows follow a similar pattern, and every episode of all of these shows has a thesis statement that is presented early in the runtime, and then through musical cues and artful cutting and edits and lines of dialogue that everyone knows are going to be highlighted in the reviews later on, generates this thing. And that is incredibly restraining. So my horizon would be serialized storytelling that is not bound by like a Glengarry Glen Ross gun to your head, a capital fucking, you know, you got the leads, I need the leads, gun to your head for every episode to be legible to reviewers so that they can sell it to the people who read their websites.
You know, it'll probably make you angry to hear that the one other industry that kind of does this right with like the not episodic, but like in terms of publishing things in order to appeal to an audience that is sort of like feeding back into itself in the way that you've described with critics, is video games, and particularly through Twitch, right? So like if you don't know Twitch, it's like this basically you stream when you play. So people love to watch people play video games for whatever reason. And now game designers are trying to produce games, and I've heard this a million times at this point, game designers are producing games with Twitch in mind. So deciding like how can we make this interesting for the audience that's going to be interested in watching people play this well watching people, you know, become like experts at it by immersing themselves in the game and becoming gamers. Like, how do we play into that identity more and more? So, you know, the one industry that's also kind of doing the same thing is video games, unfortunately.
Interesting. Amazing how all of my theses come together into a grand theory. It's almost like I'm a goddamn genius. I'm not a genius. That's a joke. I'm sorry.
That's the line that we're gonna highlight in the review. Yeah, no, that's your catchphrase. I hope you read up on it in Variety. So my final question. Usually, I ask people what video game they would make if they had no limitations on themselves. But I think that's an unfair question to ask you. So let me ask you this: if you could create, let's say, I don't want to pigeonhole you, so you could do any kind of art, but like, I'm assuming since you've thought about it a lot, you have some ideas about TV here. If you could create a show or a piece of art or anything that would somehow speak to that level of solidarity or that next step in art or anything like that, how would you envision it? Like, you don't have to be perfect here. Obviously, I'm putting you totally on the spot, but in your wildest dreams, what would you create? What would be of interest to you?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously a little bit constrained by my like basic pessimism towards art in capitalism. That makes it hard.
No, like
makes it hard for me to conceive of an artistic endeavor that is truly revolutionary or subversive. That isn't just sort of pseudo subversive in the interests of you know, pacification. But
sure.
When you were talking about that, when you were positing the question, the thing that came to mind is not something that I have conceived, but something that I read about in a book that I would like to recommend to anyone reading this or anyone listening to this, called U.S. By Chris Batchelder, who wrote Bear Versus Shark and a couple of other really good novels.
I know Bear Versus Shark. Yeah,
not really. Well, I recommend U.S. very highly. The premise of it basically is that Upton Sinclair is sort of the immortal avatar of American leftism, and he keeps getting murdered by reaction, and then leftists basically keep digging him up and bringing him back to life, and then he goes around and gives more speeches until he gets killed again. And then they dig them up again. And what's really interesting about it is that this conception is filtered through a bunch of different medium, like web pages and news reports and stuff like that. But the one that has struck with me is a chapter that is notes, studio notes for a video game where... And it starts off with the person saying, "Look, your graphics are amazing. This is one of the best looking games we've ever seen, but the game itself is not that good because the game itself is you go into a graveyard with a flashlight and you dig up figures of America's left from history. Like you don't shoot anybody, you don't ever have a rocket launcher." And the review and the notes are basically saying, can they shoot the people instead of bring them back to life? Is that a possibility? And just like when reading that, I imagine that game, the game where the point of the game isn't to kill anyone. It isn't to rack up kills or scores or anything like that. It is to revive an idea. I feel like that is so against the grain of what video games give you of the stimulus response you're getting from video games in general, that it would genuinely be disruptive and like would perhaps make a gamer rethink the sort of Skinner box that they've decided to live in.
Wow. That's fantastic. Actually, I should seriously every time, and I'm gonna stop saying that after this episode because me being surprised by it is just gonna make people annoyed after a while. Every time I've asked this question, people have come up with these amazing video games, and like I thought, like, for sure you would, like, you would not have, like, a video
game. Well, it's not mine, as I said. It's Critch Batch Elders, but it has stuck with me. Well, still,
but, like, the idea behind it, like, the idea that you would actually make the game, you could picture it in your mind, like, and your reading of it. Yeah, I love it. That's fantastic. All right. Well, thanks again, Matt. And, yeah, anytime. You're more than
happy. Oh, hell yeah. I can't wait to ambush some Twitch motherfucker.
Yeah. I'm gonna get the meatheadest dude we can possibly imagine on here, and I'm gonna just like patch you in mid talk. Yeah. All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Take it easy.